they closed the gates. This was not the ominous activity it might appear, since the keys had been lost long ago, and latecomers usually threw gravel at the windows of the houses built on top of the wall until they found a friend to lift the bar. It was assumed that foreign invaders wouldn't know which windows to throw gravel at. Then the two watchmen trailed through the slush and muck to the water gate, by which the River Ankh had the good fortune to enter the city. The water was invisible and dark, but the occasional ghostly shape of an ice floe drifted past below the parapet.
"Hang on," said Nobby, as they laid hands on the windlass of the portcullis. "There's someone down there."
"In the river?" said Colon.
He listened. There was the creak of an oar far below. Sergeant Colon cupped his hands around his mouth and issued the traditional policeman's cry of challenge.
"Oi, you!"
For a moment, there was no sound but the wind and the gurgling of the water. Then a voice said,
"Yes?"
"Are you invading the city, or what?"
There was another pause, then,
"What?"
What,
said Colon, raising the stakes.
What were the other options?
"Don't mess me about. Are you, down there in the boat, invading this city?"
"No."
"Fair enough," said Colon,
who on a night like this would happily take someone's word for it.
"Get a move on, then, 'cause we're going to drop the gate."
After a while, the splash of the oars resumed and disappeared downriver.
"You reckon that was enough, just asking them?" said Nobby.
"Well, they ought to know," said Colon.
"Yeah, but..."
"It was a tiny little rowing boat, Nobby. Of course, if you want to go all the way down to them nice icy steps on a jetty..."
"No, Sarge."
"Then let's get back to the watchhouse, all right?"
William turned up his collar as he hurried towards Cripslock the engraver. The usually busy streets were deserted. Only those people with the most pressing business were out of doors. It was turning out to be a very nasty winter indeed, a gazpacho of freezing fog, snow, and Ankh-Morpork's ever-present, ever-rolling smog. His eye was caught by a little pool of light by the Watchmaker's Guild. A small, hunched figure was outlined in the glow. He wandered over. A hopeless sort of voice said,
"Hot sausages? In a bun?"
"Mr. Dibbler," said William. Cut me own throat's Dibbler, Ankh-Morpork's most enterprisingly unsuccessful businessman, peered at William over the top of his portable sausage cooking tray. Snowflakes hissed in the congealing fat. William sighed. "You're out late, Mr. Dibbler," he said politely.
"Ah, Mr. Word, times is hard in the hot sausage trade," said Dibbler.
"Can't make both ends meet, eh?" said William.
He couldn't have stopped himself for $100 and a shipload of figs.
"Definitely in a period of slump in the comestibles market," said Dibbler, too sunk in gloom to notice. "Don't seem to find anyone ready to buy a sausage in a bun these days."
William looked down at the tray. If Cut-Me-Own-Throat Dibbler was selling hot sausages, it was a sure sign that one of his more ambitious enterprises had gone wahoonie-shaped yet again. Selling hot sausages from a tray was by way of being the ground state of Dibbler's existence, from which he constantly sought to extricate himself, and back to which he constantly returned when his latest venture went all runny. Which was a shame, because Dibbler was an extremely good hot sausage salesman. He had to be, given the nature of his sausages.
"I should have had a proper education like you," said Dibbler despondently. "A nice job indoors with no heavy lifting. I could have found my niche, if and I'd have got a good education."
"Niche?"
"One of the wizards told me about 'em," said Dibbler. "Everything's got a niche, you know, like where they ought to be, what they was cut out for."
William nodded. He was good with words.
"Niche," he said.
"One of them things, yes," Dibbler sighed. "I missed out on the semaphore, just didn't see it coming. Next thing you know, everyone's got a clacks company. Big money, too rich for my blood. I could have done all right with the feng shui, though. Sheer bloody bad luck there."
"I've certainly felt better with my chair in a different position," said William.
That advice had cost him $2, along with an injunction to keep the lid down on the privy so that the dragon of unhappiness wouldn't fly up his bottom.
"You were my first customer, and I thank you," said Dibbler. "I was all set up. I'd got the Dibbler wind chimes and the Dibbler mirrors. It was gravy all the way. I mean, everything was positioned for maximum harmony, and then, smack, bad karma plops on me once more."
"It was a week before Mr. Passmore was able to walk again, though," said William.
The case of Dibbler's second customer had been very useful for his newsletter, which rather made up.